Who are the great geniuses of physics? You probably know names like Einstein, Newton, maybe Bohr or Heisenberg. And there's no doubt our understanding of the universe would be much poorer without such great thinkers. But these men were all theoretical physicists, and their wild ideas would have remained speculations without the contributions and ingenuity of experimental physicists, who painstakingly gathered the evidence that confirms our complex quantum reality. These lesser-known names are the heroes of Susie Shee's new book, The Matter of Everything: How Curiosity, Physics, and Improbable Experiments Changed the World. Susie is an accelerator physicist, a science communicator, and academic who divides her time between research groups at the University of Oxford and the University of Melbourne. Here she is to share five big ideas from her book.
Hi, I'm Susie Shee, physicist and author of The Matter of Everything: How Curiosity, Physics, and Improbable Experiments Changed the World. In writing this book, I wanted to share the adventures of scientists and the stories of their experiments to try to answer one of the most profound questions: the nature of matter itself. The adventure starts small scale, with experiments the size of a single room, and eventually grows to today's enormous particle colliders, like the Tevatron and the Large Hadron Collider. And today, I'd like to share with you five key ideas from the stories in the book. How we know something is just as important as what we know. Experiments are massively under-celebrated when we learn about physics in popular culture. Most, although not all, physicists come in one of two flavors: the theorist or the experimentalist. Theorists like Albert Einstein, Werner Heisenberg, or Max Planck tend to work with mathematics, developing new conceptual ideas of how the world works, and doing calculations to predict or match measurements. Experimentalists, on the other hand, have a more nuanced job. While they understand the mathematics, they have to be willing to go beyond it. Experiments rely on practical skills, physical insight, and a whole lot of persistence. But they are so important, because we can't know anything at all about the real world without doing experiments. There are two main ways that experiments lead us to new discoveries. The first, which you might be familiar with, is the idea that a theory or hypothesis, often put forward by a theorist, predicts something, and we go out and build an experiment to test it. That's what J.J. Thomson did in 1897 when he was trying to figure out if the glowing rays he and others had seen in glass tubes called cathode ray tubes were made of particles or a form of light. His theory was that they were particles. So he designed experiments to figure out if the rays carried electric charge and if they had a mass. With his set of clever experiments, he overcame previous problems that had plagued researchers and established that cathode rays were in fact tiny charged particles, the first subatomic particles, which we now call electrons. A much more recent example is the prediction of the Higgs boson, first predicted in 1964 by three theorists, Brout, Englert, and Higgs. Now, it took decades, thousands of people, and billions of dollars to build the experiment, the Large Hadron Collider, which discovered the Higgs boson in 2012. The three guys who predicted it almost immediately got a Nobel Prize. But the experimenters? I bet you can't name even one of them. Now, the second way that experiments can give us new knowledge is the more serendipitous route, when experiments produce results that aren't predicted in advance. Like in 1896, when Wilhelm Röntgen, working in Germany, saw a glowing screen across his lab out the corner of his eye and decided to investigate, leading to the discovery of X-rays. He even took the first X-ray image of his wife's hand. Doing experiments requires the ability to ask good questions and the persistence to see them through. And a bit of luck doesn't go astray either. The results of curiosity-driven research grow in usefulness over time. New discoveries make new imaginings possible and can lead to new creative and innovative ventures. Curiosity-driven research tends to lead to fundamentally new ideas, and those compound in utility over time. So Thomson, after discovering the electron, within a couple of years he'd explained how electrons flow out of electrodes and into glass vacuum tubes, which turned out to be exactly the knowledge that engineers needed to create vacuum valves, amplifiers, and other devices. This gave birth to the entire electronics industry: radio, telecommunications, computers, the whole lot. Without these electronic valves and their workings, even rock and roll would never have happened, because we wouldn't have had the beautiful tube amplifiers that created that iconic rock and roll sound. And X-rays? Well, just 2 weeks after their discovery, artists were already using X-rays to take photographs of an iguana as a piece of art. And doctors started using X-rays to see inside patients without making a single incision in the skin. In time, X-rays became even more powerful as they were combined with other ideas. So from astrophysics to hospitals to border security and industry, X-rays just found more and more uses in our society over time. Now, sometimes the big breakthroughs come from unexpected directions. Like Charles Wilson's cloud chamber, initially he designed it to study meteorology, but it became the first particle detector, letting us see the otherwise invisible passage of tiny particles. Physicists adventured with these chambers up mountains and enabled discoveries of new particles like positrons and muons, which transformed forever our understanding of what matter is and how our universe works. And today, we use these particles too, so we can use muons to see inside volcanoes and pyramids like giant X-ray scanners. And we even use antimatter, positrons, in positron emission tomography scanners in hospitals. This path to new ideas is often nonlinear and serendipitous. But what's important here is not that we know in advance where our research will lead, otherwise it wouldn't really be research. But what's of value here is simply our desire to know and our willingness to do the work to find out. 3. Science might be objective, but scientists are not. The book starts at the turn of the 20th century, when many physicists thought that their work was done. Like Albert Michelson, who said in 1894, "It seems probable that most of the grand underlying principles have been firmly established." Or Lord Kelvin, who said in 1901, "The future truths of physical sciences are to be looked for in the sixth place of decimals." How boring. But they couldn't have been more wrong. What came after that was a complete revolution in our understanding, from the unstable nature and inherent emptiness of atoms to quantum mechanics. Yet it's hard to predict the future because our imaginations are limited by our current theoretical ideas and technological capability. So we shouldn't forget that physicists, contrary to many pop culture representations, are only people. We're limited in our capacity to imagine what might be possible or how the world might really operate. Perhaps this is why our discoveries sometimes have to happen serendipitously. Physicists are not immune to groupthink, egos, bias, or any other vice. We've just had to work really hard to overcome these biases in our methods. Even when we do make amazing discoveries, some ideas in physics are so counterintuitive or seem so out there that they take a long time to be accepted. Experimenter Robert Millikan was not alone in dismissing the early ideas of quantum mechanics, which he called a reckless hypothesis. He spent 12 years in the lab doing experiments to disprove Einstein's theories on the photoelectric effect, all the while gathering the most precise data yet that showed that Einstein and quantum mechanics was right. Now, the way through this very human vulnerability is both the simplest and hardest aspect of doing research. We need to cultivate a culture of curiosity to be open to the idea that we might be wrong. 4. Who gets to be a physicist? Surely we need the best and brightest minds to work on the most difficult problems in science, right? Curiosity is a human trait. It isn't racist or sexist. But sadly, it turns out that for most of the history of science, we've been limiting who can contribute, and that is our loss. Even when I learned physics, and in my research for this book, I couldn't help but notice that the great white man narrative of science was pretty strong in the history of my field. Yet there were women working in the field all along. And in my research, I found the stories of amazing physicists like Harriet Brooks, whose experiments in the early 1900s helped us understand that radioactive elements could change or transmute into one another, or Marietta Blau, whose unique background in photography and physics inspired her to make a type of particle detector, known as a nuclear emulsion, that led to countless discoveries and won a number of other people Nobel Prizes. But not Blau, despite her being nominated multiple times. Or Indian physicist Biba Chowdhury, whose first authored Nature paper on her discovery of two different new particles wasn't enough to clinch her a Nobel, which went to a man a few years later for the same discovery, albeit with his superior equipment. These stories are not isolated. Women have always been interested in physics and have always made amazing contributions, but they have been discouraged, shut out, had those contributions overlooked, or even attributed to their male colleagues. Our society tells women today that they don't look like physicists because we don't have the stories of the women physicists who went before. This isn't a few isolated instances. It has a name, the Matilda Effect, named by science historian Margaret Rossiter after Matilda Gage, a suffragist who first recognised that women's contributions are often overlooked or neglected. They encouraged all of us to find those stories, include them in the main narrative of our histories, and that is exactly what this story has tried to do. 5. Collaboration is the human force of nature. At first, it was chance that led to physicists working across disciplinary boundaries. One physicist had a brother who was a medical doctor, another found a collaborator at their new university. Later, more intentional collaborations emerged, like the physicist who used high-power radar technology to shrink down particle accelerators, so that now we find them in hospitals treating cancer around the world. But even more powerful was the way physicists learned to collaborate across international borders. After World War II, many European countries were financially decimated, and the scientists living there realized they could not compete to answer the big scientific questions with the small resources available. They also realized that a common project to pursue peaceful scientific goals could have the effect of bridging the divide between countries that had formerly been at war. So in 1954, the convention was signed that ratified CERN, the European Laboratory for Particle Physics, now home of the Large Hadron Collider. CERN was the birthplace of the World Wide Web and many other inventions, and is still a hotbed of discovery and curiosity. Nowadays, CERN even teaches the UN how to collaborate. The problems facing us today are too large for a few individuals, companies, or even a single nation to solve. And I'm not just talking about physics. To my surprise, I found that when I trace the incredible journey of 120 years of experiments in physics, a new perspective emerged. In trying to understand the fundamental nature of matter and the forces that have shaped our universe, perhaps the greatest thing that physicists have taught us all is about a much more human force, the power of collaboration and of learning to work together towards something greater than ourselves.
Thank you, Susie. That was 5 big ideas from The Matter of Everything, How Curiosity, Physics, and Improbable Experiments Changed the World by Susie Shee. If you're into physics, you might like our book bite for Einstein's Fridge, How the Difference Between Hot and Cold Explains the Universe by Paul Sen. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have an amazing day.